another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith, and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up show. Yeah, this is the third time you're getting me in the span of about 24 hours or so if you've been listening to the pods nonstop. So I apologize if you're sick of hearing my voice, but hey, this is what I do, so you kind of have to deal with it for now. Yeah, and it's been a busy schedule for you guys as well. I know and understand there's a lot dropping right now, but as I said on the preview show, we have different listeners to each show, and they all like different things. So we try and accommodate everyone with our schedule, and we try and keep it to the best of our ability. So that's what we're doing. That's why there's been so many different shows dropping, but of course they all have different subject matter. So hopefully that keeps it fresh for you. And speaking of that subject matter, I did want to spend a little bit of time on the Bayern Munich win over Arsenal and more about what it looks like going forward and why this was so important. I mean, if you listen to the post-game show that I did with Marcus, we really talked a lot about why the match was so successful for Bayern Munich. Gave Thomas Tuchel a lot of credit, which I definitely will be doing in this show as well. But there was a lot of good stuff to talk about and a lot of different viewpoints. And, you know, like I talked about on that show, I was very skeptical when I saw the lineup. But nonetheless, I still had picked Bayern Munich to win the match, to win the tie, and to advance onward. I just never really had a doubt about this. And maybe it's because I just don't respect Arsenal that much. But I think the one thing that Arsenal did prove to me is that they are not yet ready for prime time. And as good as many, many people had told me that Arsenal was this season, I didn't see it. I saw talent, but I did not see a winning mentality. I did not see grit and heart and all of those things that are required to win these knockout stages of the Champions League. So huge credit to Bayern Munich for doing that. But as far as what's next, what does Bayern Munich do now? There's a lot to assess when you think about where this team stands right now over the course of this season and where we're at right now. This was a very disappointing Bundesliga campaign. The Pokal was essentially a waste. Tuchel got canned. And this was one of those situations where if you're following it day to day, you had trouble seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And when Tuchel was sacked, I immediately thought it was a bad idea to keep him around. I thought it would really poison the locker room even more and that his messaging would not get through to these players. And I just thought it would be a debacle. And at various points since that move happened, it has looked like that. There have been listless performances. There have been instances where Tuchel clearly is not reaching the players or that the players are not responding to what he's saying. I mean, it's a two-way street with that. And I have sat here and I've criticized Tuchel and I've also criticized the players. They all own some of the blame for this season. That is for sure. But right now, none of that really matters. And here's why. For everything we've criticized Tuchel for, most of the issues that he had early in the season, whether it was personnel decisions, how he used the media to talk about players, how he spoke to players, how he spoke about players, all of that, it doesn't matter now because he doesn't have the future to plan for. And I do think a lot of what was driving his actions and driving his instincts, it was all about the future. And what Thomas Tuchel would look like 3 years from now as the coach of Bayern Munich rather than what he would look like in the next game. And for Tuchel, I get it. I understand. This was a project for him, one that he wanted to work out. It seemed like he really wanted to remain in this job and give it a go and maybe become a legend in Bavaria, right? It just did not work out that way. I don't think he could help himself from consistently assessing his roster and assessing his players and pointing out those little things that were imperfections, things that he felt like he couldn't work with long term. And because he couldn't work with them long term, he wanted to call them out now, and he wanted to get it out there so that when the time came for change, it wouldn't be that big of a shock to anyone. The problem was those methods didn't work. It alienated players in the locker room. It created a real aura of tension around this team to the point where if you remember some of those performances in the first half of the season when we were all going through this a win is a win phase, it didn't look good. You could tell that this team was not in sync on the field or off of it. There was a lot going on. But none of it matters, and none of it will matter moving forward because Tuchel won't be here. So all Tuchel has to do from this point forward is plan game to game. He doesn't have to worry if Matthijs de Ligt can't pass the ball vertically forward as much and with as much accuracy as Tuchel would like. He doesn't have to worry about Joshua Kimmich playing the six right now because Kimmich's not playing the six. Problem solved. He doesn't have to worry about the pressure to play veterans like Thomas Muller, the pressure to use youngsters like Matisse Tell and develop them. He doesn't have to worry about appeasing anyone because he just has to win game to game. And I think that has alleviated a lot of the pressure from him. He can make decisions like he made against Arsenal. And as I said on the post-game show, I did not like the lineup when it was submitted. I did not like the thought of Rafael Guerrero at left wing and Nusar Mizrahi at left back because they had never played together. And they had never functioned as a left side unit for Bayern Munich trying to make an impact on both sides of the ball. I didn't know how Bukayo Saka was going to be able to. I didn't know how much damage he was going to do, I should say. But it all worked because Tuchel saw something in that moment, something that he could use. He had these players on his roster that would be perfect for that matchup, and it worked. And even though I wanted to see Thomas Muller out there as the 10, which would have pushed Musiala to the wing, which is something I am greatly in favor of, I can't argue with it because in the end, Tuchel had a feel for this moment and he made the right decisions. And quite frankly, you know, maybe on another day it doesn't work, but it did then and that's all that counts. And listen, not everything was smooth. The first half of the match was a feeling out process. Bayern looked tentative at times. They definitely were not in sync in the attack. Defensively, they were pretty stout. In the midfield, I thought they were solid. And there were mistakes, don't get me wrong, but they were solid and, quite frankly, more athletic than Arsenal was in the midfield. It was truly an instance where the things that Tuchel decided to do, the tactics that he tried to implement, they could have all blown up, but the players bought into it. They went out there and they gave 100%. Even in the first half when things were not looking so great, you could see that the effort was there. Playing with energy was there. Heart was in that game way more so than it was for Arsenal. I just couldn't get over the way that Bayern Munich, even when not looking great, was playing with such desperation that everything mattered to them. Every single possession, every single ball in, every single tackle, it was made with a purpose. And it was so impressive to see because it told me a lot about where the team is right now, where it stands under Tuchel. I had doubts that this could work. But right now, this team's rallying around each other. This is a great team, talent-wise, on paper. Maybe Manchester City's better. Maybe Real Madrid's better. We'll find that out in the next couple of weeks. But aside of that, I'm right back to where I was in the beginning of the season. On paper, this is the third most talented team in Europe. And when it comes down to a two-legged tie or even one game, this team has the talent to defeat anyone. They've got a game-changing striker. They've got great penetrating wings who can make things happen. They've got the veteran guile of Thomas Muller. They have an athletic midfield that can do a number of different things and be utilized in a number of different ways. They've got a right back who might be the best right back in Europe right now. I mean, Kimmich, we didn't see this coming, but his return to the position has been just fantastic. They have a couple of guys who were afterthoughts at the beginning of this season in Matthijs de Ligt and Eric Dier. Nobody wanted at Tottenham, and sure as hell, nobody wanted him at Bayern Munich. There might have been a couple of us that were okay with that move. Marcus Iredale and myself were two of the only hashtag diehards around. But nobody was giving the guy a chance, and all he's done has been a very solid and stable presence who has helped the entire team with his presence on the back line. And last but not least, at the left back position, we thought we had Alphonso Davies as a lockdown starter for the next generation. Now he might be leaving. He might not even be the most effective left back on the team at this point. Who knows? But what I am starting to do is trust that Thomas Tuchel will figure out how to take all of those moving parts and use them in a way that will be successful over a two-legged tie. Now, you could point back to the Manchester City Champions League tie last season, which was an absolute debacle. Tuchel had no feel for the team. He had no feel for the players, and he couldn't make it work. Now, though, he's had a year under his belt. He has a feel for the players, and whether he likes them or not, whether he has problems with different parts of their games or not, it doesn't matter, because he doesn't have to appease anyone. He just has to win. And if all winning is, if all that he has to do is win, he might just be able to do it. He might be able to pull this off, because he's got the talent. He's got the depth. And he's got players who have done this before on the biggest of stages, under the brightest of lights. These players have done it. Many of them have done it. They all have a championship mentality. Even Harry Kane, who a lot of people will say can't win a trophy, you could see how much he wants it. And listen, of the 11 starters on the field for Bayern against Arsenal, didn't really care for much about how Kane played yesterday, but it wasn't for lack of effort or lack of desire. It just wasn't a game he was able to assert himself into. But he had other players to pick him up when he couldn't score goals. Whether it was Guerrero lofting in the cross, whether it was Kimmich darting in for a thundering header, didn't matter. They made it work. So yeah, I'm in. I don't know if they can beat Real Madrid. It's impossible to tell, because that Real Madrid is they are just as experienced, if not more, than Bayern Munich. They have just as good of young, dynamic talent, if not better. It's such a unique matchup. It's just a shame that it's coming in the semifinals. And I don't mean to sound derogatory toward Dortmund and PSG, but let's be honest, that's the third place game over there. The real championship is taking place in the semifinals between Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. So I'm very jazzed up for that. I'm very excited about this team. And I think that fans, including people like me, who have been very critical of Tuchel, and to this day, he was not the right fit for this unit. I don't think firing Nagelsmann at that time was the right move. There was really nothing good about any of it. But now it's a different story. Now we're working under different pretenses. We're just going game to game. There is no future to think about. It's just about winning. And Tuchel deserves the credit for putting Bayern Munich in this position to be in the spot of the semifinals of the Champions League. I don't know that there are many coaches right now that would be able to analyze and develop the tactics and strategy that he did yesterday to be able to get past what many people said was a superior Arsenal side. Now, I would argue that. I think Arsenal has a lot of flaws. Like Bayern, I think they have a lot of talent, but I don't think they have that winning edge yet. I don't think they have the mentality. They certainly did not have the heart. So they've got some learning to do. But this Bayern side, they've got all of that. And if they put it all together, and if they can make it all work, they might just be able to pull off something special this season. And if they do, we'll celebrate it just like they won a treble, because it will be one of the more remarkable tasks that I've ever seen this club do. I mean, I'd like complete. Like, I did not think this was possible just a couple of weeks ago based on how they were playing. But everyone's gotten over their hangups. They all seem unified and focused. And if this team really is on the same page, they are going to be extremely difficult to take down. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some of the comments that were made after the game, particularly some quotes by Joshua Kimmich, which I felt were very interesting and very telling about where his mind might be heading into the summer transfer window. Hang with us. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there. I appreciate that. This is Chuck Smith, and we are, of course, giving you the weekend warm-up show. Now, before the break, I touched on Joshua Kimmich and some quotes that I found very interesting. And we had a post on this and on BFW on Thursday morning. There were a lot of things about the match with Arsenal that obviously fans clung to, that they looked at, that were a lot of positive things you could really take out of it. But one of the things I wondered about, and I have been wondering about for weeks now, is what's the mental state of Joshua Kimmich? This was a guy who at the beginning of the season took heat from his coach publicly in the media, I mean, Tuchel was out there campaigning to bring in someone to replace Kimmich, and no matter how he tried to cover his bases and how he tried to lessen the blow on it, the bottom line is he was out there trying to bring in somebody for Kimmich's job. And Kimmich, being the warrior that he is, did not take kindly to it. And while he didn't fire off in the media, he did give a couple of retorts here and there. Remember, we all remember that "I am a number six" comment that he made when asked about Tuchel's open desire for a new number six. Kimmich is an immensely prideful person. He's an immensely intense person. And when all of this was going on, I could feel the tension brewing within him. This was not something like, listen, I don't talk to Kimmich. I don't have a relationship with Kimmich, obviously. But you could feel it. And if you know what kind of player he is and you know what kind of person he is, that was always going to be something that was going to bother him. And yeah, I think that some of his down performances in the beginning of the season were affected because he had a coach who obviously had no confidence in him, that was looking to replace him. And at some point, you can take that a couple of different ways. You can be mad about it. Your feelings can be hurt. You can try and do too much. You can feel unmotivated and maybe not want to give your all for a guy that doesn't want you there. There are a million different ways a player can react. And I think Kimmich was hit with a little bit of each of that, each of those things. I think that he genuinely was disappointed that all of this became so public and was put out there, and that the club didn't back him at the time. And I have talked about that relentlessly for months now, that no one from the club stepping up and ending all of that, stopping the talk about getting a new number six, whether they needed one or not, didn't matter. You didn't need to talk about it. You didn't need to go to the media with it. You didn't need to start with one of your team leaders, the keystone of your locker room. Didn't need to do that. So when no one stepped up from the front office to really take the reins and say, listen, Kimmich's our guy, we're going to stop talking about this, we'll assess the roster at the end of the season, blow anything, no one did. Part of it was because they didn't have an identity at the time. You had Jan Christian Driessen, who at CEO maybe shouldn't be involved in the sporting side as much, definitely more of a finance and business guy. If Herbert Hainer, the former Adidas executive who was the president, again, it's nothing against his ability to contribute on the sporting side, but he doesn't have that, doesn't carry that weight that you would find with someone like Ole Hoeneß. You didn't have Max Eberl in-house. You had Christoph Freund, who, listen, I don't know if he's good at his job or not. He probably is, but he wasn't the right voice to come in and weigh in there either. So Kimmich was left hanging by himself at that point. And I'm sure he did not like the fact that no one really came in to stop what was going on. So now we get to the point where after yesterday, Kimmich has really a season-saving goal, because this really could, I mean, it could have been the goal that kept the season alive. If he doesn't score there, you never know what can happen. We could be talking about Arsenal winning on PKs right now. But Kimmich came and he made a huge play and had a terrific game overall. And what Kimmich said afterwards was that it was the most important goal of my career. It feels very good. I had to listen to a lot of criticism this year and received very little backing. But this proves hard work always pays off. Now, why is that important? Well, the very little backing thing is key. I mean, it goes to show that some of the things that we had theorized on in this show over the past few months, that he was indeed feeling that. But Kimmich did go on to say a couple of other things. When asked about the topic of having very little backing, Kimmich replied like this: "Yes, in general, everyone has commented on me personally. There was little talk in favor of Kimmich." Now, going third person there is a boss move, especially after you score that kind of goal. "I'm very proud of how tonight has turned out, and I'm delighted about the goal and us reaching the semifinals." Really hardcore stuff there from Kimmich, and it might sound like your normal post-game quote, but Kimmich got his point across. And why this became such a hot button for me is because when I look at Kimmich's season, and I've seen all of these rumors emerge linking him to Real Madrid, FC Barcelona, Liverpool, Manchester City, etc., Arsenal, I mean, who hasn't he been linked to? PSG. it makes me think that there was some damage done. And whether Kimmich is holding that against the club, whether he's holding it against individuals, two things have manifested here within Kimmich. One is a burning rage and fire to prove everyone wrong, which he looks like he's doing right now. And two, maybe some angst and hurt feelings enough built up that he's open to looking to see what his future might look like at a club that would support him a little bit better. And that's where I think Manchester City comes into the mix. We've seen these rumors that Pep Guardiola wants to bring Kimmich there. And a lot of people jump to the conclusion, well, oh, he would go there and be the backup to Rodri. We don't know that. You don't know how Pep would use Kimmich. That's a very volatile situation at Man City. We don't know what their personnel moves are going to look like. Any number of their key players could leave. It's just the nature of the beast at a club like that. But we do know that Pep has some pretty unique ideas about how to use Kimmich. He's used him as, how many positions did Kimmich play under Pep? He definitely played center back because Bayern was having injury issues, big surprise, back in the day at that time. Played some right back. I believe he might have even played a little bit of midfield there. He could have even played a little bit of wing on occasion for a couple of minutes here and there. But we know that Pep would have an idea of how to use someone as versatile and someone who just has the mentality that you would seek for the game like Kimmich does. So while I don't agree with what Tuchel did at the beginning of the season, and Kimmich was by far not his only target, Tuchel had stuff to say about a lot of players. I think that this has opened Kimmich up to the possibility of leaving, and it would be a damn shame. Now, I don't know what Kimmich wants for his future. I don't know if he wants to remain at right back. I don't know if he wants to move back to the midfield. It's very tough to tell. But he's going to have to make some tough decisions heading into the summer. And I think more so than ever before, he's going to consider some of the options that are out there. When you're talking about going to be able to go and play for Man City and Pep Guardiola, a club that's absolutely going to be the odds-on favorite to go back and win the Champions League next season, I think it would be appealing to Kimmich, and that doesn't even factor in that City can pay Kimmich basically whatever he wants. And, you know, for Kimmich, when he goes to re-up his deal here, which would probably take place in the summer of 2025, I think, you know, Kimmich would be looking at probably having to take a pay cut. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out. I do think that his quote was telling. I think that, you know, there are some aspects of it that to me really hit home. I know in speaking with RLD a little bit, he seemed to think that Kimmich might be pointing toward the pundits or the social media outrage. But I don't think Kimmich cares too much about what Didi Hamann says or Lothar Matthaus or, as I said to RLD, at Bayern fan 6969 on X. I don't think Kimmich cares about those people, but I do think Kimmich has such a deep reverence and respect for the club that he expected someone to take his back during all that. And it just didn't happen. So, I mean, listen, if Kimmich wants to hire me as his PR spokesperson, I took his back at the time. And I'm not even like some massive fan of players. One thing that if you've ever heard me talk, like I admire their games, but I'm not like a fanboy for anybody. I like the way certain players play, but at the same time, I will criticize them if they don't have a good game here or there, or if they do something I don't like. It's just the nature of the beast. It's the only way to be fair. There are some players who I don't like at all, but I will also give them credit for when they do great things. So you got to try and go right down the middle with all of this if you want to give the audience and the BFW community that we have out there a fair take on everything. So even the little things like admitting, like I didn't love Tuchel's lineup, but damn it, he was dead on with things. You have to be fair with it all. But with Kimmich, I do think this is going to be a point for him where he's going to have a tough decision to make. He's going to have some really good options. And this is a situation where he might really consider moving on. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back with a little bit of news about Chris Furyk and the latest on him, because things could be getting a little bit interesting between Bayern Munich and Chris Furyk, according to Sport Bild. So hang with us. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith. Thanks for hanging in there. Hope you enjoyed the first couple of segments there. We're not going to go overly long with the show, and I don't have an entertainment rundown because, quite frankly, I am not watching anything. To put you behind the curtain a little bit on me, this has been a crazy week. I've got a kid turning 17. I know, you can hardly believe that because you probably thought I was like 23. I mean, seriously. Okay. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but been crazy with work. Obviously, I do have my daughter's 17th birthday, which is today. Then she has a prom. Then she has a soccer showcase. So you can see that my life and my weekend is probably out the window. So I've had a lot going on with that and preparations for all of that. And just haven't been able to jump into anything hardcore television wise. Although I keep hearing the Shogun calls for people telling me to watch that, so I probably will give that a run. I just have to figure out when the hell I can do that. But anyway, we're here to talk about Chris Furyk and Bayern Munich's evolving winger issue. And it's not really an issue as much as it looks like this could be the one area of the team that absolutely does experience some turnover, no matter who gets hired as the coach. Obviously, the coaching hire, which looks to be right now Julian Nagelsmann, is going to play a big role in personnel decisions. And Nagelsmann being the number one candidate as of right now is a very interesting selection because there's this whole history that you have with Nagelsmann and Bayern Munich and his current role as the German national team manager. It really makes things complicated. And for Nagelsmann to come in, we've seen him run a number of different systems. He can do the 4-2-3-1. He can use a 3-4-2-1. He can use a 3-4-1-2. The guy is tactically flexible and really will use different formations from possession to possession at times. It's bizarre. And he tinkers too much. And we all know this. We all know his faults, right? But in some respects, it's a good thing with how flexible he is because he can take a different group of players and he can work with them and build a formation around his players. And that's when I think he was working at his best at Bayern Munich, when he figured out what formations work best for that particular unit. And, you know, we all know the story from there. He didn't get a chance to finish the job. He didn't get a chance to really implement his full vision like we were told he would. And it all flamed out horrifically bad because he went on an ill-timed ski trip. Whatever the case, now he's in a position where Bayern is in talks with him. That is official. We have seen his agent acknowledge that. We know that the DFB wants to keep him around and be the German national team coach. We have our own guys at BFW theorizing that Nagelsmann maybe could actually keep the German national team job and make it work in conjunction with being the manager of Bayern Munich. It's possible. I mean, it might be a conflict of interest when it comes to squad selection. I mean, can you imagine if they hired Nagelsmann right now and then he has to cut Leon Goretzka from the German national team squad for the Euros? I mean, that might be a little awkward. So there are some logistical things that might prevent that from happening. And I know a lot of you out there play FIFA, and that is, I think, one of the things that you can do in that game. I'm not a gamer, so I don't know, but I believe if you do whatever the manager mode is, you can be the manager for Germany and Bayern Munich. So whatever, maybe it's possible. Maybe Nagelsmann is the right guy to pull that off. I don't know. So I'm very fascinated to see how Nagelsmann decides on what he wants for his future, how the DFB and Bayern Munich work something out, and if it's possible that he does retain the positions for both. And maybe not on a long-term basis, but maybe Nagelsmann keeps it for a year after the Euros so that he can feed right into Klopp after Klopp is done with his one-year sabbatical, which he keeps saying he's going to take. So, I don't know. You have this whole issue with Nagelsmann and perhaps him coming back to Bayern Munich and then looking at the kinds of players that he would like. We know that Nagelsmann has a fondness for a lot of players on the Bayern Munich roster. And toward the end of his tenure at Bayern, he wasn't even really using wingers in a traditional sense. We saw Leroy Sané used more of as an attacking midfielder. We saw Jamal Musiala for sure as an attacking midfielder. We saw Kingsley Coman as a wingback. Serge Gnabry played a little bit of wingback. Serge Gnabry also played a little bit as an attacking midfielder. So there were a lot of tactical and formational things that Nagelsmann will do to use the talent that he has. But when it comes to this wing position for Bayern Munich, you are at a point where if you're going to make changes and turn that part of the roster over, this is the time to do it. You have a lot of veterans that are high priced that also have good market value. You have a new coach coming in who has, unless it's Nagelsmann, doesn't have a major allegiance to anyone. And even if it is Nagelsmann, it's the time to make roster changes now that he's coming back. So you look one by one at Bayern Munich's roster and you see Leroy Sané, who by all accounts, the club wants him back. I mean, the executives are kissing his ass right now for being tough and gritting out and playing through his injuries, which he deserves credit for. They're maybe going a little bit over the top with the praise, but hey, they're doing whatever they can to retain their man. Kingsley Coman, a guy that could probably get a hefty transfer fee, is a guy who I think doesn't really have a role moving forward. There's been a lot of people and a lot of discussion about Coman. Coman definitely is a guy with a ton of talent, and he can do so many things well. His game really hasn't evolved much over the past few seasons. He's still a good winger, still someone that would be very appealing, I think, for a team in Spain or in England. But at Bayern Munich, he's kind of run his course. He's not an exceptional scorer. He's not an exceptional crosser. He's great at 1v1s and breaking down defenses, but you have players that can do that already. So I don't know what Coman's role is moving forward, but I would guess that he will absolutely be a player that is on the block for Bayern Munich this summer. Serge Gnabry is another one who, again, so mercurial, so up and down, can do so many things and look so good on the big stage and then go for months without doing anything. It's maddening because you see the talent level that he has, and just his most recent spell on the pitch, he was terrific, but then he got hurt again. And if he's not hurt, then he's slumping. And it's one thing after another. And I think that, again, it's a case where Bayern Munich doesn't necessarily dislike players like Gnabry and Coman. I think they actually really love them. I think they think they're both integral players to this team. But at some point, you do have to start to flip the script here and make some changes to take the next step as a club and build your next generation. And there's no better place to do that than at the wing position. So I wouldn't be shocked if Coman and Gnabry are both on the block. One of them, at least, I think will go this summer. I mean, you have the wild card of Leroy Sané there who could also go. I don't think Matisse Tell is a player who will be sold or loaned out this summer. I think Bayern's got some big plans for him in the future. And, you know, we still have the internal debate at Bayern Munich for him. Is he a wing or is he a striker? He seems to prefer to play as a left wing or a left wide attacker, left striker, depending on the formation. Bayern Munich, there are some people there that think he could play centrally as a striker. I think he's more effective as a wing. I don't think he's a traditional wing either. But it doesn't mean you can't have a player like that on the roster. It just means you can't have three of your four wings or four of your four wings that operate the same way. So I think Tell gives Bayern Munich the flexibility to be able to move on from Gnabry and Coman. You have Brian Zaragoza, who we don't know what he is yet. We just don't. He has barely played. He certainly gives the team a different look. He has a different skill set. Again, I don't know enough about him and certainly haven't seen enough since he came over to Bayern Munich to say he could be a traditional winger in that sense. He still, to me, looks like someone who fits the Coman mold in terms of being someone who's better at breaking people down 1v1, using footwork and quickness to get by people, rather than being someone who could loft in crosses on a consistent basis or use a cut in to score. We don't know what Zaragoza is or what he can be, but what we do know is that there is already speculation he could be loaned or even sold this summer. So there's really no solid base for any of these wingers right now. The only one we for sure know that they want back is Sané. And I would include Tell in that mix that they definitely want him back, but we just don't know if they fully see him as a winger. So you have the three players that are in question, and sure, it sounds like Zaragoza, it doesn't really seem like they would be eager to sell him just yet, but it also doesn't seem like anyone's overly enamored with having him on the roster. So we've seen now that these rumors around Chris Furyk have started to really build up. And according to Sport Build, which was captured by the Twitter account, iMia, those guys do a great job. This is what Sport Bild had to say. According to his entourage, Chris Furyk wants to join Bayern. A move to Munich has been a dream for the player for many years. Borussia Dortmund were determined to bring back Furyk to the club, who once played for their youth teams. However, his 23.5 million euro release clause is difficult to afford for BVB for several reasons. Wing, not a priority for them. Champions League qualifications uncertain being two of the reasons listed there. Bayern are currently the favorites to sign Furyk. Now, Furyk is a divisive topic among Bayern fans because some people just don't think he's that good. That at VfB Stuttgart, that he is solid for them, but maybe couldn't make the next big step up in competition to play at a team like Bayern Munich. I'm not so sure about that. I think, if anything, given the kinds of wings that Bayern Munich currently has, it wouldn't be so awful to have someone that had that traditional wing profile in their repertoire. I think Zane is a good player who's maybe, I don't think he's a pure winger either, but I think of the ones that they have on the roster right now, he is probably the most pure, if that makes sense. I still think he fits more into the mold of someone who's looking for his own shot first, someone who prefers to play centrally, who's not as great working on the really on the outer flanks, like you might say about Coman. But not having that traditional, this is a winger who I know is going to come in, do his job, that they're going to be able to come in, get the crosses into the box to Harry Kane, that they're going to be able to take someone on and maybe do a cut in and rip off their own shot, that they're going to be able to make runs up the field and time them perfectly and be able to take those balls that they get and make something happen. I think they need someone with Furyk's profile. I don't know if he's the right guy or not, but he's had a great season. At 23.5 million euros, he's certainly affordable. I mean, this is not a hefty fee to pay. It's less than they paid for Sacha Boué, who they might not even need. So I'm okay with the Furyk move, and we've talked about it several times, but as we get closer to the transfer deadline, it does really start to appear that there could be turnover at that specific position. And if they're going to go that way and they're going to get rid of one of those wings or two, then I think bringing in someone who I feel like is a little bit more traditional of a look in terms of a winger and would be something that Bayern doesn't have on the roster, I would go with Furyk. And hey, listen, I'm the same guy. I would play Jamal Musiala at wing and let him just go to town every game. And I don't care if he's a traditional winger or not, because I feel like he's so effective from that position that he can make it work. But if you have a player like him and you have a player like Zane, who, again, I don't know if he's a pure wing, I think you need to have one that fits that mold. So I would go with Furyk. I think it's a cheap deal. I think it's worthwhile. My worry would be, can you get him enough playing time that he would stay happy and not want to move on pretty quickly? I think that's very questionable. So we'll have to see what happens, but I don't mind it. And much the way I didn't mind that Eric Dier move, I think that there can be a role for someone who's a stable presence and who is predictable in what they can do and what they can bring to a team. And I think Furyk might fit that mold at the wing position and really give a new coach an option for someone that's going to give you that consistent performance. And if you think back to some of the moves that were made over the years, in a lot of ways, he kind of reminds me of that Ivan Perisic move that was made. One that people didn't necessarily go over the top about and that people weren't exactly raving over at the moment, but Perisic played such a key role during that treble run. I'm not saying Furyk's coming in and helping the team win a treble, but I'm thinking that he could fill a role and be a very good and valuable asset to a team that has lofty expectations heaped upon it every year. So I'm on board with Furyk. Let me know what you think about that. Obviously, let me know how you think Bayern Munich looks heading into the Real Madrid tie. We'll be doing a lot with that on the website, so continue to check us out there. And that will wrap up this edition of the Weekend Warm-Up Show. I appreciate everyone hanging in and getting through the tough onslaught that we have put upon you with these podcasts. Believe me, we appreciate that you listen. I know that, you know, everybody's busy. I talked about some of my busy schedule, so it does mean a lot to us when you fire up your phone or your laptop or whatever, and you take the time to listen, because one of the best things, and I always say this, that we do is have the interactions with all of you when you drop us comments and when you hit us up on social media. It's a lot of fun. And it, trust me, it's built up a lot of really good relationships, at least for me, that I now talk to people who I definitely didn't know years ago. And we have a common interest and we're able to discuss things rationally. It's kind of nice. It's totally unlike trying to talk politics with someone or anything like that. And listen, some of the discussions get heated, but it's always fun in the end. And you know, that's what BFW is really all about. So you can always get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get this podcast at Bavarian Podcast. You can get Tom Adams at Tommy Adams 71. You can get I Need No Name at BFW INNN. You can get Siler at BFW Siler, and you can get Marcus Iredal at Iredal Marcus. Check out everything we have going on at BavarianFootballWorks.com. We've got you covered on all of your Bayern Munich and German national team news. So hang with us there. Drop us some comments. Let's discuss things. Have a great weekend. A couple of beers on me, and we will see you next time.